Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. I'd like to welcome everyone this morning to my talk show. This morning, we're going to be talking about the topic for this morning is the rewards of adoption and the effects of adoption and from a parenting as well as from the child's perspective. Joining me this morning will be Emily. I believe she's not on yet. I hope she'll be coming on shortly to help me with my show this morning as she'll be managing the chat room. And also this morning, my special guest is Rebecca Utley of Hope Cottage here in Dallas, Texas. And she will be talking with us with regards to the rewards of adoption and from a parenting and child perspective. I just wanted to really quickly welcome everyone. For the last 4 weeks, we have the opportunity to meet 4 out of my 9 moms mentioned in my book, From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. They've been very funny on the air, very witty, and yet very strong in their life's conviction. We all had the last 4 weeks of lessons about motherly love, so that's kind of really exciting about what's going on. And so I'm hope that you guys have gotten a lot of information from that. I see that Emily is online. Emily, is that you?
It's me. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Pretty well. I'm just not getting that chat box up.
I think it's up and running right now. I must have started a little bit late, so I think it's finally up and running right now. Can you just double check to make sure and see?
I have. I've been playing with it for like 30 minutes now, and it's not coming up with the box. It usually says chat now. There's a little thing you can click on,
uh-huh.
And it's just not.
I think it's on right
it.
Now, if I'm not mistaken. Let's see here. I believe it's on right as of right now because
I don't have it doesn't say like I don't have an area to click on that says chat now.
Oh, really? Okay.
And normally it does, and I'm under your name, so.
Oh, okay, interesting, because I had just clicked onto it. I had forgotten to get it going. Let's see here. Let's try one more time. Before Rebecca joins us, what I understand is the chat is on this morning, so it's showing that we have one user, and that's me. How interesting! Let's type. I'm going to type something in here this morning and just say a little test that we're running this morning, and see. Yeah, I'm up. I may have you logged out and logged in with your own ID, and that might help. I guess that might be the only way of doing it, instead of being with me on my ID. I was told that you could do it with my ID, and so I am...
Well, when you go to it originally, it says,
Oh,
I just clicked on
a
phone. Let me see if
it'll do it again. Let's see here.
Oh.
Are you on?
No. I just don't get it.
You just didn't get it? Okay, well, like that's
someday-
all.
Says chat. Some days it says it doesn't say it at all, and I don't know why. Sometimes it goes back and forth with it.
Huh. Okay. Well, so much for that. I seem to also not. I've not seen Rebecca coming online here with us, so I don't know what is going on with that either. So let me see what I can do in terms of trying to get in touch with Rebecca. I'm going to try to call her on my cell phone here and see if she will be able to call in this morning. So Why don't you tell us a little bit about your week so far? I know we had an interesting staff meeting yesterday, so maybe you can.
We did. We began talking a round table about, you know, FMK, and then we turned into Perez Hilton.
And you're right. And I see Rebecca is online with us too this morning.
Okay.
Rebecca, are you there?
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine.
That's good. I'm really glad that you're on the air with us this morning. You know, we started out with a little, by the way, I want you to meet Emily, who is my assistant. She's actually managing the chat room, but I think we have some difficulty this morning with the chat room, and so I'm not sure whether we're up and running as far as the chat room is concerned. But Emily, Rebecca, Emily.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Fine, thanks.
And so, like everything else, sometimes life is not perfect. So we started this morning with a little technical glitch, so to speak.
Okay.
but I'm glad to have you on this morning. And as I had mentioned earlier in the show, that this week I'm going to be starting a month-long show series focusing on why we celebrate Mother's Day. And last 4 weeks I've talked about on the air with my moms, four of my nine moms who were mentioned in my book. And so we had 4 weeks of lessons in motherly love. So this coming 4 weeks or so, I'm going to be talking about why we celebrate Mother's Day. And of course, this first show, I like to dedicate and honor my mom, my Malaysian mom, Nya, who currently lives in Malacca, Malaysia. And having been adopted by my parents at birth, the topic for today, the rewards of adoption from a parents and child perspective, is very dear and personal to me. And so having you on the show as my guest, the director of community relations from Hope Cottage, pregnancy and adoption agency here in Dallas, Texas, truly is very special to me as we go on for the next hour to talk about what you guys do for parents, and also to get some wonderful feedback about the latest things that's happening in the overall world of adoptions. And so, Rebecca, why don't you give us a quick rundown about what Hope Cottage is all about?
Well, we have been in business for over 90 years here in Dallas, and we've been helping families build their families through adoption, but really started as an orphanage, foundling home back in the early 1900s, and have evolved as the world has changed. Went through a period where we ran a number of maternity homes when women felt the need to leave their home and live somewhere, perhaps with other women who were pregnant, for support, and then return after the baby was born. And, you know, society and has changed over time and become more understanding and supportive of women and their choices. And so today, we help women who are facing a crisis pregnancy get through their pregnancy, get the support they need, the counseling they need, the medical attention they need to make a parenting plan for their child, whether it's for themselves to raise their own child or for them to find a family who can take that role and responsibility on. And we have about 80% of the women that we work with throughout their pregnancy will go ahead and parent their child. But they were in need of some help to get to the point where they were prepared to do that. So that's what we do, because our goal is for every child to have a family and to be in a healthy, safe environment. And if that's with their birth parents or if that's with an adoptive family, then that's our goal, is to make sure that happens. Because what we don't want to have happen is unprepared people bring a child into the world and then their frustration and their inability to be prepared causes them to wind up in a involuntary removal or in the state system or a child being abused or neglected.
Right. But, you know, here in the United States, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of rigid laws that actually helps to protect everyone. I think that's excellent comparatively. I guess I'm sure overseas, elsewhere, the laws may not be as rigid or as defined in this case in protecting everyone's rights. I know, being an adopted child myself, and of course I think adoptions sort of have been around forever, and I know that from my perspective, even my sister was adopted from a different family in Malaysia, and she was 6 years older than I was, and it was certainly a blessing in talking to my mom, and she mentioned how she went through life and all those things, unfortunately, that causes her not to be able to bear her own kids. And it was certainly a definite blessing having the opportunity. And even at that time, surprisingly, of course, you know, at that time, Malaysia was just starting out as a country back in the 60s. And it was fairly quite defined in terms of the adoption process, which is what's fascinating. And so that kind of leads me to, I think, I want to begin with talking with you about the business of side of adoption. What are the trends that you've seen in the adoption industry as of today?
Well, I think that one of the things that we see is that, as I mentioned, times have changed, and more women, at least in our culture, feel supportive and able in many cases to parent as a single parent,
mm-hmm.
Unlike they felt in the 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the economic realities of the world also play a role whether or not they feel they really can afford to do that. And we all see and hear the statistics of how, you know, you can't raise a family on the hourly wage paid minimum wage workers. And so, you know, that challenge does focus into it, and we're into reality-based counseling and, you know, what can you really
right.
do and the costs that are involved and how you might make that work and how some women say it is impossible and it's better for a family who is prepared than for me to do this on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So the economics are something that we're seeing women having to deal with. As much as they might like to try it on their own, they might feel this is not the right time. Another
right.
thing we're seeing is what's changed the world, you know, forever is, of course, the Internet and
mm-hmm.
how more and more families are coming to us where they, maybe the birth mother lives here,
mm-hmm.
they've connected with her on the Internet, and they live in another state, and they need someone to do counseling and to work with her through her pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're seeing, and we may never meet the family.
Wow.
But the family has an approved home study. They have the support of their agency in another state, but they can't finalize the adoption without the support of an agency in the state where the birth mother lives. So we're seeing more and more families coming to us for what's called an assisted adoption, rather than being a local family who just wants to do an adoption and work with a local mother.
Right.
So that's kind of a trend that we're seeing change. We're seeing also, for the first time in years, more and more families who looked at and considered international adoption,
mm-hmm.
which meant that they would be getting an older child who had been institutionalized,
mm-hmm.
And would be from a different culture. We're
mm-hmm.
finally seeing those families, because international has become more and more difficult,
mm-hmm.
Just because the number of countries that open and close and how the rules change
right.
and
right.
all that, that we're seeing more of those families recognizing that maybe if they're prepared to take on all of those challenges internationally, maybe they might be prepared to take those same challenges on domestically.
Right.
We're seeing a
right.
real rise in families who are coming forward and willing to take children out of our own CPS system. And so that's encouraging.
Do you think that like someone like Madonna, and, you know, with the recent influx of celebrities, you know, going out and getting children internationally, so to speak, and does that influence tremendously on how various governments all over the world are looking at adoption? Because I know international adoption has always been going on for a very long time, but it's certainly been underneath the radar, so to speak.
Well,
and
countries seem to like it under the radar. They don't seem to like that kind of attention.
Mm-hmm.
I think that for people in the countries, if they hear about it, I think that you know, may be something that is it could be good and it could be bad, and I think that's what the politicians worry about, is it, is for what good it does, it also makes them look bad.
Right.
We saw a real, you know, there's been no smoother adoption operation as far as international goes than the country of China. For years, people have been able to, and we, and you, you know, count on, this is how it works. They have a very strong system. This is how it works. And yet, when they were awarded the Olympics, things changed dramatically. They didn't want to be, for the year before and afterwards, they wanted to be looked at for different reasons than the number one international adoption placing country. And so they slowed down. They just slowed the system down. And it's still having a long-lasting effect on families who were already in the system. What used to take from start to finish 14 months is now over 2 years.
Wow.
And so, but it's just because they were so worried about their image that they wanted to drop off the top of the list and be highlighted for other things. Well, you know, how many people really think of China as the number one adoption placing country?
Right.
It just wasn't, from our perspective, as individuals, it didn't make a difference one way or the other. But in their minds, it did, and it seems that the same thing in Vietnam. They've shut down.
Shut down
because they say that they can't be sure how things are being done and that they're worried about corruption. Same thing in Romania. They closed up the minute they thought that it was going to affect whether or not they were accepted into the European Union. They shut down. They haven't placed a child internationally in years. And yet the problems of that country and for the children have not changed. It's the politics.
So the political, everything has been politicized now from the political side in terms of like whether it's scrutinized, I guess. I mean, I that's one of the things, Rebecca, when I look at that, it could go on both sides of the equation, because what happens is that I do know, I guess being from someone from Malaysia originally. Again, now I'm not talking about Malaysia as a whole or anything like that, but and then again, I've been away for so long. But having said that, I do know living in the United States, you have a tremendous amount of rules and regulations and safeguards, let me put it this way. One of the things that, ironically, I saw the other day on a night talk show on TV was that the fear is, of course, when you have celebrities that's now making it so quote-unquote fashionable or whatever, even though the intent is very good about adoption, and because there's so many babies out there that need a kind, loving, wonderful, nurturing family, that the whereas on the other side of the equation is that the families that they come from all of a sudden right now look at this as a ticket out, a cashing in, so to speak. So now you're looking at from a perspective of like baby trafficking.
Right.
And so even though that's not the intent, you and I know that it's human nature, you want to be nurturing and everything else. And when it's almost like, you know, as long when you don't give too much attention to something in life, it's good. And then on the other hand, the flip side of it is that if it started out bad, then if you shine the light on it, it gets better. So which is which? Which one do you feel like is really the reality of life out there?
Well, I think that there is a lot of light shining going on, and I do think that that's why, I mean, that's certainly what happened in Romania. The European Union was looking at the country as to whether or not they could see them as being a partner in the union, and they were, you know, they went in with this philosophy of let's, you know, see what's going on in international adoption.
Yeah.
And they seem to think that they're, you know, that not everything was above board. And they had this opinion that any country that to be considered not a third world country, you'd be able to be to be able to take care of your own.
I see.
So I think that you're right. I think that that safeguards are important. The World leaders seem to believe that. They met at The Hague and came up with some what are considered international adoption laws for all countries to follow,
mm-hmm.
and most countries have signed on to that and participate in that process for international adoption, which is very transparent.
Mm-hmm.
There are countries that have not, but have their own rules and safeguards in place. And every time the light shined on those and there's some question, like in Guatemala, as to what was really going on, and a lot of allegations of baby trafficking and of attorneys being in control of the situation,
right.
the heat of the world looking at that shut it down.
Right.
Now, is
right.
that in the best interest of the kids? Well, who knows? But at the same time, it seems to be the way countries best deal with it is let's shut it down and try to start over again.
Right, right.
And
right.
That's the process they're in now. So mm-hmm. in the interim, you know, there are no children leaving the country,
mm-hmm.
At least that we know of, and there are, you know, so the country has to take that burden on,
mm-hmm.
whether they can handle it or not. But I do think that if you don't have or don't appear to have some kind of system and some kind of transparency, that you're just, the world, they're just not going to put up with it.
Right.
They're going to say, you know, something's not right here, and recommend they shut it down. And most countries will do that before they will stand behind their system. And like you said, it's because maybe they don't have the safeguards.
Right. What are the countries right now, international countries, that offers adoption?
Well, probably there's. Probably the largest ones that are active right now are still China, Russia, Kazakhstan, right now several African countries
mm-hmm.
moving up the ladder as far as getting involved in allowing children to leave. And
mm-hmm.
a lot of these children are children that have been left orphans due to illness and disease and AIDS and things like
mm-hmm.
that. And families seem to be willing to, you know, embrace these children and raise them. Now, the children themselves aren't, I'm so sorry. The children themselves are not sick necessarily, but came from families that were. And so that seems to be the hot buttons right now.
Right.
Romania's been shut down for a number of years. Guatemala's been shut down for almost probably 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And some other countries like Colombia and all, they
mm-hmm.
have a adoption system, but it's kind of hard to navigate. And in the grand scheme of things, they probably only do a few hundred a year.
Now, do you see a trend? I'm sure there was a trend somewhere along the line where you see, obviously, people like to adopt domestically. I mean, that's just a natural in the natural. And then when international adoption opened up, I mean, there's sort of like almost like a gold rush to do that.
Right.
And then now with greater scrutiny put on the various countries to make sure everything is legit and everything else, and of course to protect the parents as well as the child, do you see a coming back to a local domestic adoption process that has sort of, do you see a rise in domestic adoption?
We do. As I said, though, I think that the real rise has come from families who are willing to take children who are a little bit older
mm-hmm.
and are in the system, because even though the demand for domestic adoption has increased,
mm-hmm.
as I said, the supply has
mm-hmm.
been down for a number of years
mm-hmm.
because fewer and fewer women choose to make that choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, you have to realistically say, okay, I was going to go to Guatemala, but
mm-hmm.
if I went to Guatemala, chances are I would get a child who is, you know, 3 to 5 years old,
right?
Has probably been outside the care of their family
mm-hmm.
for most of their life
mm-hmm.
and is going to be chances are that I'm not Guatemalan, so therefore it's going to be of a different culture. So why is that any different than taking on raising a child of the same age
mm-hmm.
with some of the same issues, maybe even better disclosed?
Mm-hmm.
Because the CPS system is going to know what the family issues were.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so there's not going to be any surprises, perhaps. You know, they're right here. I don't have to travel. I don't have to pay the big expenses. And that's another thing that has made, I think, the people look at domestic, especially children already in the CPS system, is the expense of adoption.
Right.
International adoption has continued to become more and more expensive, even if just because of the travel and the stays and some of the rules. Some of the countries now expect you to travel, make two trips, and stay for an extended period of time. If you adopt in India, you might be there as much as a month. And so it's sometimes prohibitive, even if it was something that you would want to do. So
right.
they have to look at what's available, and that's where the kids are.
Right, right. Well, coming back to domestic adoption, one of the topics that I want to talk about is that in 2006, you guys got into embryo adoption. And can you bring us up to date with regards to that? Because it seems to be a very hot topic now with regards to embryo adoption. At the beginning of this month, the state of Georgia is about to pass a law, a specific act. The act is called the Option of Adoption Act that offers protection for embryos to be adopted as a living human being. And then also, of course, everyone is talking about embryo adoption from the up in the big states now. Everyone is talking about it. You have a report in the Washington Times about families that has pretty much grown over the last several years from 2004 to 2006. That has just got into the embryo adoption side of adoption versus, say, like you say again, in terms of adopting a baby or say, a very young child.
Right. Yes, that is an option for some families. The woman must be able to be healthy enough and be able to carry a child. But should she be able to do those things, then embryo adoption may be the answer, and it may allow her to actually carry and deliver a child, which she may have thought she would never be able to do. And by looking at embryo adoption rather than paying for and feeling the need to create embryos, of which you may or may not be able to use all of them, or may not have the money to create all of them, embryo adoption is a great opportunity. The people who participate in that from the donation side of it are families, as you mentioned, who see the embryos that they created as life.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they don't feel they're in a position to destroy them, to turn them over for research.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they know that they can't keep them frozen indefinitely. They do deteriorate, and basically, it's over time, it's no different than destroying them.
Right.
So they've
right.
got to take some kind of action if they feel strongly about it. And so if they've created their family and feel that they have all the children that they want and can afford to raise and have extra embryos, then they're looking for a family to donate those embryos to. So they're anxious to match with a family. And the way we handle it is we work with Nightline Adoptions out of California, which came to us, already had the program in place, already works with a number of clinics throughout the country, and they wanted us to help recruit and train families and prepare them. And since 2006, we have had close to 20 babies in our area born through this program. So that's not a long, long period of time for that
right.
many children. We actually had 11 born just last year.
Fantastic.
So we're really excited about that potential for families as another way to grow their families and to help children who might not otherwise have a family.
Is there a trend in the sense that women now feel like I can experience the actual process of pregnancy? Is that one of the area that they say, wow, versus I'm actually just adopting a child that's already born. Is that one of the main criteria in terms of what they're looking at from the perspective of embryo adoption? And perhaps maybe on the other side, the flip side is maybe there's less complications from paperwork-wise and all the other things that may, the challenges that comes with adopting an existing baby?
Well, you know, it has its own challenges. There's still a lot of paperwork through the program that we offer and working with Nightline and some of the other organizations. The families are still required to go through the home study process as if they were an adoptive family, because they are technically adopting children of another family. Now, granted, the children aren't born, but those children are going to be full siblings of children who are already born. So those are the different challenges, is that they're going to be, they're still going to be forever tied to another family, and their children are still going to have, they're going to have issues to deal with and explanations to give, even though there's no pretending, you know, that this child is my child, and no one's ever going to know that I basically adopted this child before it was born. And that's
right,
how we look
right.
at it, is that the child was adopted before it was born. It's still adopted. It's still living in a family that did not genetically create it, and that's something that has to be recognized by all of the parties. And if the families can't go there, if they grasp that, then they're probably not the right family, because it is not in the best interest of the child to be raised in a situation where it doesn't know its true genetic history, nor that it knows that there are siblings out there that it might meet and run into that are not their siblings. They're not available to them as someone to date. It's just real important that all of that be very transparent. So we work with our families just like we work with any other family to say, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with creating your family this way, but it is a creation of a family, and we and all parties have to know and accept that. And it's just real interesting, because people do tend, because the families who are donating the embryos are choosing the families. They're choosing families they feel comfortable with. They're choosing families that look a lot like them or have characteristics like them, so that their children would be raised with maybe similar values or in a similar culture. And so you see these babies, and I mean, it would really be easy to say, oh gosh, I never would have known.
Right. So you're saying that the donors in this case have a tremendous amount of influence too, because they have their rights, rather than just say a child that's already been in an orphanage where really there's no one looking out. I mean, you do have someone looking out for the child, but versus the someone who owns the embryo and is putting up for adoption suddenly have a lot more access and a lot more say to where the embryo goes then.
Exactly. And that's pretty much typical in domestic adoption in the United States. I mean, it's very birth parent driven here. And that is, as hard as that is sometimes for adoptive families, in a lot of ways that's a good thing, because then even if the birth family says, I don't want to make that decision, I don't feel I'm prepared to do that, I'm not in the right place, I don't want to deal with it, whatever, we try our best to get from them, though, what they would like to see in parents.
Right.
That we're going to raise their child and what they're comfortable with, and try to carry out their wishes, even if that means overlooking some other families that would be great. If that's not what we think the birth family would be comfortable with, we try to respect their wishes, so that should they come back later to us and say, gosh, now that I got my act together, I kind of want to know more about the family that raised
right.
the child, they can feel good about it, because it's all about everybody. You know, adoption's a lifelong process, and we don't want anybody spending years fretting over their decision and it not being healthy for any member of the triad.
Right. That's very true. Now, I know embryo adoption, according to the Washington Times, certainly it's becoming a rage, and that's where I think the overall, that's the tendency of where I think young parents are heading to. So do you feel like that's something that in Dallas here, we have actually seen the same trend?
Right. And we're it's interesting because when I was talking to Nightlife, they said we have one of the busiest successful programs in the country. I don't know what it is about Dallas that's made that happen, but they have a lot of similar partnerships and projects going on in other areas, but for whatever reason, Dallas seems to be a hot spot. And it may be because we, you know, are in the Bible Belt where families here connect with families and feel a connection with families who see this as life. And I think the more the government works to make embryo research a priority, the more families are going to have to take a stand as to how they feel about embryos and either put them in, I think they're going to be asked to choose and say, okay, you know, we're looking for embryos for research. And if they say, no, that's not how I see it as life, then if you see it as life, what are you going to do with that life? And I think there's going to be more and more families looking for families. So I do think it is really the next level, and it's great for families who can carry a child. There are a lot of women, though, that's not an option.
And then
we're back to looking at more traditional adoption.
Traditional style. One quick question before we leave embryo adoption. Do you think the Texas legislature is going to follow the footsteps of Georgia in terms of coming up with some sort of legislation and to make it a law for the state to recognize embryo adoption as the state of Georgia is in the process of doing? And by the way, according to their report, is that they're just basically waiting for the governor to sign off on it. So what are you guys expecting, I guess,
think we're expecting any legislation right away. It's certainly not going to be in this session. We're 2 years away from the next session, so what might happen in the next 2 years, it's possible. I don't think that families or donors here feel the need for that. I don't think they feel that the government in any way is getting in their way of doing this.
Right.
And we certainly know that Texas is not one to fall in line with what's going on in Washington. That has become pretty clear over the last the current governor.
That's right.
Looks like happening in Washington, it's not going to happen here.
Yeah.
So I think people are pretty comfortable that whatever trends they've got going with putting more emphasis on research of embryos and stuff, that's really not carrying to the state level. So I think we're probably several years away from seeing that kind of legislation in place. I think it would happen if they ever felt that there was some threat to continuing doing embryo adoption. But I think at this point they feel that Texas is a very comfortable, supportive place. The hospitals, everybody that we've worked with have been great. And maybe that's part of the reason that it's one of the better programs is because there is so much support here from the medical community.
No, I think, and that comes back to the full circle we talk about, sometimes less is more.
Right.
Where you don't have to get involved and just let nature take its course, because in a nutshell, we all are humans. We know what's right and what's wrong. Maybe I'm cynical from that perspective, but I think in the end, when you talk about something from the heart, it really brings the best out of people, especially in this case, in terms of what is right and what's wrong. This brings me to the second half of the show, in the sense of I'd like to focus on personal side of adoption. What resources are available to help family bond? From what you know, can you talk about from a general standpoint of view, as well as what Hope Cottage have done, I guess, because you guys have track records to prove that.
Yes, we do a lot of training with our families throughout the home study process of, you know, what to expect and what to recognize, and everything from the reality that women who adopt often go through what we call post-placement depression, which is similar to postpartum depression, you know, being anxious for an event for a long period of time and then it happening and maybe happening different than you anticipated, or now that it's over, the letdown and just the kind of blues that can follow. All of those things are things that we help families watch for. You talked about bonding. We don't see a lot of issues along those lines. We don't know whether it's because, you know, families have waited so long, and then when they see that baby and know that it's theirs, you know, the bonding process starts. But for women that it doesn't just click right away, you know, I think that they are prepared to know how to work with their medical professionals, how to come back to us. We see adoption as a lifelong process. We try to prepare our families for the later stages as children grow, the additional issues that adoption bring, and how to address those, and how to be able to come back to us, and what kind of resources we're going to provide, because it is a process, and it isn't something that you just take the baby home and it's over and everything's going to be fine.
Right.
There's going to be issues along the way. Some of our families have some contact with the birth families. That, too, is going to be an evolution and change over time. And so being prepared for that and knowing that we can always step in and kind of help facilitate how those changes may be affecting their adoption is one of the roles that we feel is important to play. And we're here for families who adopted from Hope Cottage, as well as families who are in the area who may need support and maybe their agency isn't local or they're not available. So we do reach out to the community to offer these programs.
Now, you guys had mentioned in the very beginning, you had mentioned something about the Internet changes the dynamics of adoption, local adoption, certainly if not international. So now, are you guys involved in the sense that you may have someone from here that's been adopted out, as well as, I presume, someone here adopting in from somewhere else? And so you guys kind of followed this throughout the process, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And what sort of, you know, I know you mentioned some resources that you guys are working on and have, you know, to offer. What sort of strategies do you recommend people that are interested in adoption at this stage? Someone who is here, living here, listening to the program and say, okay, wow, you know, we've talked about this for a prolonged period of time. What would be the process that they need to go through in order to get the ball rolling?
Well, all they have to do is call, and part of what we do is we have an intake coordinator whose job it is to help assess where families are and what they're really looking for or open to in the way of adoption, and then put them in touch with, we have orientations where you can sit down and just talk one-on-one and find out more about the different programs. Maybe they're really bright or focused on one particular program. We can get them in touch with that. But every program, whether it's adopting a child through the CPS system, whether it's an embryo adoption, or whether it's a what you might call a traditional domestic or international adoption, all of those start with a home study process. They're just a little bit different for each program, but every program requires a home study. And
what is the prep time for that?
That's right. And it's a time to do some self-discovery and to grow and to make sure you have kind of your affairs in order and that there's that you've thought about all the aspects of what bringing a child into your home is going to mean, as well as for your relatives and family and you know, can they and what can we do to prepare them to accept a child that's going to come into their family through adoption, because we want to make sure that these children are truly treated as a child that would have come through through natural birth. And so we really want to make sure that they've addressed all these issues with parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles, and that this child is going to be embraced. And, you know, we have families, like I said, who maybe are willing to take children who are a little older of a different race. So we've really got to investigate what that means for them and for the child, and have they really thought that through?
And you guys follow, once the adoption process is done, and that leads me to the next question I have right here, but I'm just trying to set it up. Basically, you have the process done, taken care of. It may take anywhere between 12, I presume, to 24 months for you and everything else. And then now let's just go way out in the future.
Right.
Do you have, not to mention, of course, the challenges of having adopted someone from a different culture and ethnicity and everything else, but you guys basically keep track of, it doesn't sound as good as, maintain communications with the child in this case, or certainly with the family. Do you have some wonderful stories to tell us about that?
Oh, sure. We have, in fact, we have an employee who was adopted from Hope Cottage, when I had a great growing up experience, went off to college, got involved in a relationship that didn't quite work out the way she had anticipated, found herself in college and pregnant, looked at what her options were, looked back on her own adoption and thought, you know, this is really what I want for my child, is to have parents who are prepared and ready to raise this child, and came back to us and placed her child for adoption, and is now in her, it's been probably 10 years, and has, you know, gone on with her life and is now giving back to the community and to Hope Cottage and to the whole idea of supporting adoption by working for our agency and going out to the community and talking about adoption as an option and going into the high schools and talking to kids about, you know, what it is and the responsibility of being a parent and how adoption is a loving option and choice. And that there aren't just two options, to abort or to parent. There really are two life options, and that is to parent or to place for adoption.
Right.
And it's amazing how the kids respond to her and how they realize, you know, what an awesome responsibility this is and how maybe they hadn't supported the idea of adoption. So that's just one of the stories. We have wonderful, wonderful people. We have people coming back twice a year. We have a picnic, family picnic, and in the summer, the spring, and then at the holidays we have a holiday open house, and that's an opportunity for families and adult adoptees to come back. And we have a gentleman in his 80s who continues to make it to every event that he can.
Fantastic.
Because Cottage is his home.
Right. But, you know, that comes back again. I think it's my mom told me one time when I found out about the fact that I was adopted, and certainly I didn't find out when I was like 1 or 2 years old, but to the point where, you know, when I found out that I realized that when I was adopted, and as I got older, she told me this wonderful story about you will find that parents that are wanting to adopt, they are ready to give the love. Versus, and this is a no reflection to any families out there, but technically speaking, sometimes families are not ready for the children. Like you say, whether it's by accident or by whatever that means, but the people that actually who wants to adopt, they're ready. They know what they're walking into, and certainly your program proved that, because you think you're ready. Well, let's see if you're really ready to adopt and to take that on, that responsibility. So I think that's tremendous. We just have about roughly around 10 minutes left in the show, and what I want to do is I do want to talk about the future of Hope Cottage, and I know that you have a fundraising event coming up, and it's an annual event that you have. You talk about your picnic and everything else. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes, we have our picnic coming up this Sunday. We're real excited. Our families are coming back to visit with each other and for the kids to play and enjoy seeing other kids who have been adopted as well. And so we're excited about that opportunity. We do this twice a year. It's not so much a fundraiser as it is a time to share. But we always have something going on that we can, you know, talk about to make sure that the we have an opportunity for the parents to keep up with what's going on at Hope Cottage and participate. And so this year, you know, one of the things we're doing is tying in with your book.
Thank you very much for doing that.
Well, we're really excited because we really feel like one of the things that I said in our little mailing that we sent out about it is that, you know, not a lot of people understand the difference between motherly love and a mother's love.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when you think about it, you know, we've all experienced love that we could say, gosh, that's like my, you know, something my mother would say or something that, that would come from a mother. It's that motherly love that we get from people around us who want us to do well and who want to be supportive and want to see the best, be the best that we can be. And that's in addition to what we might get from our mothers. So I think it was just a great topic and a great revelation for you to sit down and look around and say, you know, who has helped make me who I am?
Mm-hmm.
And it be broader than, but it doesn't take anything away from the mother who raised you, but it just adds to that because that it means that you were open to taking advice and love from others, and I think that's what we want to encourage people to do.
No, it's true because I think the process is everyone can be loved, but you have to be open to being loved, and then at the same time, everyone needs to be, in order to have the ability to love, then you can give love. And so it requires two people. And that, to me, is what the dance of life is all about. And of course, in this situation, I've been very fortunate meeting all the different wonderful women in my life that you know, have sort of mothered me over the years. And because simply because subconsciously I allowed them to do just that, their natural, I pull out the best, I drew out their nurturing instincts in helping me to succeed. And so for that, I'm very thankful because I never even thought about that because it's just, you know, you take life for granted many a times. But I do want to ask you this real quick. I know you've been the CEO of Hope Cottage for quite a while.
Right.
And now you just recently decide to give up that position and, to me, in some ways, taken up a much more challenging position of being the director of community relations. So can you just kind of tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. My husband thinks I'm nuts. but the truth, I came to Hope Cottage in 96 to be the director of community relations, to help raise money. They were in the process of building the building we're in and of building a fundraising program because after 75 years of basically being funded by United Way and the community fund, they were seeing that they were going to have to broaden that and get broader community support. And so I came to be to do that and did that for a couple of years and was very successful and got to know the volunteers and work with the staff. And they asked me to step into the role of CEO, and now have done that more than a decade, and enjoyed that role, but always kind of saw the need for and continue to support the fund development side of things in the role of CEO, which is a correct role, but still I think it was one that I leaned towards. And in this very challenging time, I really felt that personally and professionally that it was time that I step back and make a choice and either be the CEO and spend all my time on day-to-day operations and on the strategic side of things,
right,
or go back into the fund development side, and felt for Hope Cottage and for myself that the best use of my time and energy was to focus on the fundraising for now and in the future. And that it was really better for somebody else then to be able to come in and look at the day-to-day and the future of details of the programs. As we talked about, international changes regularly, change. We're seeing this wave of assisted adoptions coming along. And it's just a takes a lot of time and energy to feel like you're always keeping the agency on the forefront. And
right.
So this, I think, is a great fit for me, and I think it's time for someone else to come in and look at all of those opportunities and challenges and say, okay, let's look at it this way for a while and see how that works for us.
That's fantastic. I tell you, I mean it in a very, very nice way here, that whether you realize it or not, you are a mother to everyone, being the CEO as well as, in this case, a director of communications, and your tenure at Hope Cottage for this period of time has certainly made a positive difference in many, many, many lives. And people may not realize that, but and sometimes in some ways you may not realize it, because we are always in the process of we just do what we do, and we don't take time to sit back and see, wow, what we have done that makes a long-lasting impression in people's lives. So I think that's very, very exciting for you. And I really am thankful to have the chance to talk to you this morning. And before we end this program, I do like to all of my other guests, I do want to ask you if you have any recipe for living that you would like to share with us this morning.
I think that my best advice and best recipe is to not sweat the small stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so easy for parents to get hung up on, oh gosh, I want my child to look right, I want them to be clean, I want them to do the right thing, I want to be the best influence, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm a super parent, mm-hmm. and that my kids turn out to be super kids. And you know, the reality is that if that's your expectation, you're always going to be disappointed. And so you're always trying to catch up and make it better. And I think that the best advice that and what my kids have over time told me is that you've taught me to not sweat the small stuff. Because you miss the big stuff.
Right,
or you
right.
don't realize that the
right.
big stuff is there. And I think that that's, you know, so that's my recipe for living. And my motherly wisdom is that there's, you know, kids. People think that that there is this perfection that they should work towards as a parent. And really, what kids want from us is just love and attention and support.
Right. That's very, very true. Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on the air with us this morning. And all the best to you in your new position, and I hope that you guys have a wonderful picnic this weekend. And thank you again for your kind words for my book, and I look forward to working with you guys in the future on anything that you guys want to do. And so, but thank you again for making a positive difference in lots, in many, many lives of, speaking for myself, someone who's adopted, I thank you for being with us, for us, you know, being with us and for us, and thank you again.
You're welcome. Thanks, Johnny.
Thank you. Well, for all of you who have just listened in, I've been talking to Rebecca Utley, the Director of Communications for Hope Cottage in Dallas, Texas. Hope Cottage has done a tremendous work for families here in Dallas area as well as the United States. And as you have heard about the latest trend about embryo adoption, you can get in touch with Hope Cottage by going to www.hopecottage.org. And for next week, I will be having Linda Lizzie Juergens, the Executive Director of the National Association of Mother Centers, to talk about celebrating motherhood in the 21st century. And for all of you who are looking for additional information about this show and upcoming shows, please go to my blog, johnnytan.com, frommymamaskitchen.com, and frommymamaskitchentalkradio.com. This show can be downloaded to your podcast by coming to frommymamaskitchentalkradio.com. For all of you, again, thank you so much for listening to this show. I really appreciate you guys taking time this morning to listen to us. And please join us again next week as we continue on the series of celebrating motherhood and the rewards of being a mother and why we celebrate Mother's Day. And I want to bring that to all of you guys in bits and pieces every week. And thank you very much again for joining us this morning. Have a great weekend, coming weekend, as well as a great week, and I'll talk to you guys next Monday. Thank you. Bye-bye.